The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on August 17, 2001, in Innisfraith, Ireland.
For those who are coming to this class first time, we're dividing an hour and 15 minutes up into different topics. First, Mahabharata, mostly storytelling and talking about it. And then we chant around together, or most of the round. And then we talk about Vrindavan, read a little about Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada meditations. And along the way, room for different questions by devotees and comments. So in the Mahabharata, we're up to the Swayambhara ceremony of Draupadi. Swayambhara is a special ceremony for princesses, where different men would come and compete for her hand in marriage based on their executing some great archery or other display of valor. In the Krishna book, there's a scene where all the residents of Vrindavan meet the other devotees of Krishna at the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra, and Krishna's different wives get together, and they all talk about how they were won by Krishna in different swayambars, and some of them said, well, my swayambar was more difficult than yours. They had to shoot the target by looking down and through a wheel and a fish, and well, my swayambar was like this. I was won by Krishna by his subduing a number of bulls. So this was done in order to win the wives of the Kshatriyas. That sometimes there was some fighting and bloodshed, and so even today that wives wear a little red in the part of their hair. It's still in ISKCON, it's put in that part at the marriage time. I remember in the beginning of ISKCON, they used to be worn all the time by women. They don't wear it anymore. Backing off that particular custom. But it signified that some blood was drawn and for him to get that wife. Not just this powder, Prabhupada said. So, I thought of a couple of questions before we begin this. I think you all know, therefore, what a swayambhara is. So, I have one question, which I'll put to you, which I still think of. Why is a man considered to be the most fit to marry an excellent lady like Draupadi just because of his expertise in archery? And that's it. They come forward and draw the bow, and whoever hits the target, he wins the princess in marriage. Why should that be considered? It seems to me to draw some doubt in that system. Has anyone thought about it, or aside from doubts, have some settled it in their mind? Hasn't bothered anybody? Yeah.
I think that was kind of the end of the system, because first they have to be princess before they got there. That means they have to be highborn, so they have to be compatible in character and taste, Prabhupada says, to the princess. So they have to have the same caste, basically the same psychophysical makeup. And then the swayambhara was...
That's a good point.
There were two things. One thing was the archery. The other thing was he had to get away at the end. He somehow had to fight his way out. So, I mean, that meant courage and determination and valor, and these are the Kshatriya qualities.
Yeah.
He was maybe proven more than just the competition itself. It was maybe one aspect.
Yeah, in a broad and simple sense, they were Kshatriyas. This in Varnashram, they were all Kshatriyas. We don't hear of the Brahmins having to do that to get their wives. So we're reading Mahabharata is about these royal persons. So they, for example, a Brahmin, if he doesn't know the Bhagavad Gita, if he's not clean and so on, then he's not a Brahmin. So how could they be Kshatriyas and marry a Kshatriya wife, as Shonaka Rishi is saying, unless they made a real manifestation of obvious qualities of Kshatriyas. As soon as we hear of Kshatriyas growing up, right away they learn the weapons, they have a military teacher. So just as a Brahmin would have to show that he knows Brahminical knowledge, they have to show that, yes, I passed my not Bhakti Shastra class, I passed my bow and arrow test and my other weapons test. Even the read in Mahabharata, when the boys grew up and they had their teacher Drona, then they had a big display to show at the stadium how they knew all these things now. They showed all the different weapons. Okay, and have a... Yes?
On the question you asked, I was thinking to be very successful at anything, you need a high degree of sense control. You know, archery, I mean, there's a lot of very strong competition, so to be something who was actually the best, who would really have had to be very expert and determined and, you know, have to really control the senses to get
that. Yeah, that's kind of like Aniruddha, he's here. No, he was here. You've been telling us about martial arts. It's not just like a boxing match where you learn to annihilate the other guy, but there's a whole science of discipline and respect of the teacher, and it's not like you're becoming a hoodlum, but you're trying to... What was that motto they have? Something about truth?
Do the right thing always?
Yeah, maybe. Not to back down. Something about truth.
Well, to be a formidable opponent against all untruth.
Yeah. So these are all codes of like protectors. Kshatriya, one who protects from hurt. They're not just going in there shooting guns. Like so many people today do. Okay. And then I have a similar doubt. Why is a woman considered most fit because of physical beauty? This is often, we hear this, like one description after another of some person who's supposed to be admired in the Mahabharata and another Vedic literature, that she was so beautiful like this, her lips were like this, her shape was like this, and I sometimes have a problem like that. It seemed like a beauty contest or something, a beauty queen. Radharani is also sometimes described like that, most fit for Krishna because she's the most beautiful. So that produces a kind of an annoyance in the mind. Why all this emphasis on physical beauty? So what are some answers to that? Yes, Keshav?
Speculation, but maybe it was you see one of the things from performing very pious activities in the past, and so there was that quality. And it's the piousness that causes that, and that's also a qualification.
Yeah, yeah. They're not ordinary women. For example, talking about Radharani, his birthday is coming up. There's some poems, so many poems, but there's a description of her by Raghunath Das Govatta, Raghunath Das Goswami. And it's obvious he's describing a transcendental person. You know, he says, these aren't the actual ones, but I'm making them up. Her mascara is the sign of her sulkiness towards Krishna. Her lips are the indication of her hankering for Krishna. Her such and such, even dress, you know, her silk sari is the symbol of her separation from Krishna, her ecstasy of Kali Kinchita, all these things that this is all spiritual, transcendental beauty. So you wouldn't even see it that way. That's why it can't be confused with a beauty queen of the films or something like that. It's a different vision. Why would Raghunath Goswami be attracted to that female beauty? Because it's all transcendental and can't even be seen by a lusty materialist. So that's like an extension of what you say. It's not an ordinary beauty. We hear later about Draupadi that she's an expansion of Lakshmi. So Lakshmi is the goddess of the Supreme Lord, and so they had this luster coming from them, this beauty, which is not mundane. And that's not all they have. It's Krishna's not attracted just by feminine beauty, but love of God. Radharani attracts him because of her love for him. Yes?
I was thinking also of any possibility that it's just because of the limitations of language that we have to describe somehow. So we use these words to indicate the beauty of the person. And somehow the people are trying to paint a nice poetic picture or something to describe the qualities of this person. So somehow, because of the limitations of language, they have to use descriptions that we can look up to, if you like.
Yeah.
A beautiful person. So that's not meant to just indicate their absolute quality.
Yeah. In language similar to what in which collides or sometimes confuses us with our experience in this material world. That's where we're warned not to hear about the beautiful affairs between Radharani and Krishna, because we'll think of it like the mundane beauty. So it's a limitation of language and a limitation of experience. Say, oh yeah, I know what that's like. I know what that beauty is like. I know some beautiful people like that too. So, how are you doing? Let's talk a little about the Swayambhara. The Pandavas were going dressed in their mendicant cloth. Hridayananda Maharaj described it as loose fitting, so poor cloth. So. They couldn't easily be recognized, their bodily forms. And so they were walking along the road, and they met some Brahmins ahead of them. The Brahmins were kind of laughing at them and say, why don't you come with us? Follow us. You boys look like you need some new cloth. Come along with us. We're going to this Swayambhara. So not everyone was going just to compete. They were going to watch the great show in the stadium. And in hopes of getting charity, poor Brahmins would get charity from the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas appreciated that the Brahmins were there cheering them on. But a Brahmin was certainly not expected to win Sopri or even compete. So they said, come on, you, and then they were joking, and they pointed to Bhima, look at this one. He has a body like a thunderbolt. Surely he will win much wealth if he enters the wrestling competition. So there are other things going on. And they said, you'll probably win a lot of wealth. I think they even joked that maybe Yudhisthira could even win Draupadi. It was all in joke at the fellow poor travelers. Anyway, it was a stiff test. A small target had been placed on the top of a tall pole. Beneath it was a rotating plate with one small hole in it. An arrow had to be shot through that hole at the moment it was aligned with the target. It's, while it's whirling, you had to get through. And only a particular bow could be used, one which an ordinary man could barely lift. Arjuna was enlivened to hear it. He prayed to Krishna that he might have the chance to try for the princess. So the king was giving away his daughter, was Drupada, and he made tremendous preparations. He built a big stadium, and it was all jewels in it, and he was being very much appreciated by everybody for putting on this free event. So everyone flooded in and sat in their right place in the stadium. Now, of course, the Pandavas were still completely incognito after escaping from the burning house. And then when they saw Duryodhana and the others, their anger rose. But Bhima particularly, but Yudhisthira checked them with a glance. Then there were actors and singers. Day after day, this went on. And the really top-rated military men, generals from different places, they were boasting, "I will win, I will win." And then this is the first appearance in the Mahabharata of Krishna as a person, as a character, you can say. The first chapter of Mahabharata, not this book, but the actual full Mahabharata, it starts with a number of praises and prayers of Krishna as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's very significant. It would be nice if they included them in these books. Now, Hridayananda Maharaj was reading them. So Krishna's praised at the start as the Supreme Lord. But as the plot begins and the story begins, this is his first appearance. He and Balaram representing Dwarka, potentially also competitors, you might say, to enter and try to get Draupadi. He comes there. And after all this attempt, of course, a successful attempt, by the Pandavas, along with Vidura, to stay incognito, Krishna, in this big crowd, he turns, he looks at the brothers, and he turns to Balaram and says, "In my opinion, these five men over there are the Pandavas." So that's Krishna's penetrating vision. I heard a rumor that my cousin survived the fire in Varanavata. This seems true. What is your opinion, Rama? And he agrees. Now here's a famous scene. I'll just read as a paragraph, and then I'll play the Prabhupada tape. Prabhupada is talking about two things at once. One of them we're not reading now, and that's the attempt to make Draupadi naked, which comes later. But in telling that, he also explains Karna's particular feeling of revenge. So Keshava Dasi mentioned how the ladies would have pious activities behind them. Oh no, it was Shonakarishi who said that the men would have, in order to compete and be successful, to be allowed to compete, they had to have the right caste. So Karna steps up. Seeing him march toward the bow like a golden mountain entering the arena, the Pandavas considered that the target had been struck and the princess won. As he approached the bow, however, Draupadi stood up and said in a loud voice, "I shall not accept a charioteer's son as my husband." Knowing that Karna was the son of Arirata, leader of the Sutas, who generally acted as chariot drivers, Draupadi exercised her prerogative and denied him the opportunity to attempt the test. Karna blushed deeply and laughed in vexation. Ah. Glancing at the sun, he turned and strode back to his seat. He ground his teeth and wrung his hands in anger, but said nothing. So, put that on.
Draupadi was lost in death, living. So, Karna, he had some attraction from Draupadi from the beginning. When there were Sambars, so Karna also went to contest, and he had very much attraction for Draupadi. But Draupadi wanted to get Arjuna as her husband. But she pointed out, because she knew that if Karna takes the contest, he will be victorious. Karna is more smart than Arjuna. Therefore, she played a trick that this Sambara ceremony is meant for the Kshatriyas, not for others. I cannot accept my husband, anyone else except the Kshatriya. So Karna is not a Kshatriya. Karna's history is that Karna is the pre-married son of Kunti. Before her being married, she was born of Kunti. From the year, therefore his name is Karna. But still, out of social fear, Kunti did not kill the child, nowadays they kill, but he floated the child on a boat, and the boat was left close going here. So one carpenter collected Karna and raised him, but he was Kshatriya, he was Kunti's son, born by son, son God, Surya. So, Kunti has the power of calling.
Those of you who saw the movie that I've been recommending, Karna was a powerful actor, but whenever he remembered or tried to remember his birth, you could see he had a very hurt expression on his face, and he said, "My mother abandoned me when I was just a baby." And they also played nicely Kunti's great feeling for him and her confusion, how to relate to him, how to get close to him. Because I can't reveal that he's my son. And then she went to him on the battlefield when he was sleeping at night and asked him to come back and to be with the brothers. And he said, "No, you abandoned me when I was just a baby." And then she went to the battlefield again when he was dead. And while she was mourning, grieving the body, then the other Pandavas came there, and she told them that he was actually their brother. And so Karna is denied. Then Shishupal tries, big warrior. He can't even string the bow. He tries to, and he's thrown on his back. He lays exhausted for several moments, then gets up and returns to his seat. Jarasandha, another big name, bent the bow, held it in one hand, and again the bow resisted, and he was thrown to his knees. And Duryodhana stood up. Silence fell on the assembly. He bows to Drupada, who nods slightly. Duryodhana lifts the bow, strings it deftly, places the string, places on the string one of the gold shafted arrows. Taking careful aim, he loosed the arrow. It speeds upwards and passes cleanly through the rotating hole, but missed the target by a hair's breadth. The prince angrily throws down the bow and returns to his seat. Knowing that it was Draupadi's destiny to marry Arjuna, none of the Yadava kings, including Krishna and Rama, attempted the test. They simply watched and laughed as the bow hurled each of the princes to the ground. They breathed a sigh of relief when Duryodhana's arrow whistled past the target. The wicked man did not deserve a prize like Draupadi. But where was Arjuna? Only Krishna and Balaram felt no apprehension. So we'll stop here. Because as we've been describing, how you have to be a Kshatriya. Now, after all these Kshatriyas were not able to do it, Arjuna steps forward in his simple Brahmin cloth, and there's a big controversy whether he can be allowed to do it. So, beats. Thank you. So we're chanting for 7.5 minutes for reasons already expressed. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'm going to sing a bhajan. I don't have papers to give out, but it's one that many devotees are familiar with, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna. You going to play the harmonium? So if I get caught in a key that's too high or low, I'll indicate to you that you can give me a key. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan.
Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan.
Sri Govinda Gopinata Madana Mohan.
Sri Govinda Gopinata Madana Mohan.
Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan.
Kalindi
Jamuna Jaya Jaya Mahabhan. Gata Bamsi Bata Vadasha Kana Jaha Sabalila Koilo Sri Nandana Nandana.
Jaha Sabalila Koilo Sri Nandana.
Sri Nandaya Shoda Jaya Jaya Gopaga Madhi Jaya Jaya Dengu Bhaktaga Jaya Vishvanu Jaya Kirtida Sundari Jaya Purnamasi Jaya Abhiranagari Jaya Jaya Gopi Swara Vrindavana Maja Jaya Jaya Krishna Saka Batu Vijara Jaya Radhe Jaya Krishna Jaya Vrindavan Sri Govinda Gopinatha Madana Mohan
We've been talking about Vrindavan mostly experiences devotees have had in visiting Vrindavan in India. Today I want to ask some questions. Maybe we'll only get to one. They're all rather heavy and difficult to answer. But we've been given information in Prabhupada's books about them. Difficult to realize, certainly. So, the first one is, what is the difference between Boma Vrindavan and the Vrindavan in the spiritual world? Boma means the Vrindavan in this earth. So, one short answer is none. There is no difference. Except that one is there and one is here. If you think the Vrindavan in this world is a material place, then that's a great offense. When Krishna is absolute, so when he comes to this world, the place he comes and he visits is in Vrindavan, tract of land, as Prabhupada says, so many hours from New Delhi. And he came there and performed his pastimes, and devotees still remember the place and the pastimes. It was excavated as recently as 500 years ago by the six Goswamis, who Lord Chaitanya asked to go there because the pastime places had been covered over, and they refound so many places which had been covered over, and established the first major temples. So those are some answers to the question. Anybody like to give some more answers? What's the difference? Yeah.
The covering of home of Vrindavan is to keep those who are not faithful or materialistic people out. So that explains the difference between Boma Vrindavan and Goloka Vrindavan, that they're seen in, you know, this garbage in the streets and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. That's a very important instruction, because people will read the Krishna book and then go there and be very shocked. And Prabhupada, he said, when he made his living place Vrindavan, some acquaintance of his said, why are you making your retirement in such a dirty place? And so that was, he obviously didn't appreciate, and better that he think like that and stay away. So that covering explains the so-called difference. Yeah.
Another thing is that Poma Vrindavan is sort of the practice Vrindavan for the sadhakas to attain Goloka Vrindavan, which is to be eternally perfect.
And there are some differences, like there are no demons in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. There are sometimes rumors of demons. And so those demon personalities do not appear. And Krishna is eternal youth there, Kishore age. So, but the mercy that Krishna shows in the material world is in one sense even greater, that he shows all these babyhood pastimes and the pastimes of killing the demons by which the devotees can worship him. You want to say more? If you want to go to the available Vrindavan and try to find Krishna there. Yes?
So like for Mayavadis in the back court, there they're considered part of the coven, and beyond them is the real Boma Vrindavan, if I'm not.
Well, yeah, like we mentioned, other things that would distract you, so. They would distract you also. What is your name, Prabhu, in the corner? Raghunath Bhatta. He said he wrote, he was going to Vrindavan, he wrote a letter to Jai Deutschmarsh. Give me some advice from Vrindavan. He said, avoid bad association. So somebody could think, what's the question of bad association in Vrindavan? But like you say, there's so many sahajiyas and mayavadis, one has to be very careful. Once Prabhupada, he set up a farm, still there, New Vrindavan, and so they were developing that with cows and everything, and Prabhupada was encouraging them in your New Vrindavan. He says, yes, this New Vrindavan is even better than Vrindavan, because there are no mayavadis there. So it can be a dangerous place, and you have to watch who you associate, not just take it that everyone there is perfect. You were saying, Kalabi, that you can get emails from Vrindavan. Well, you better distinguish what the email is saying, even though it's coming from Vrindavan. What's the difference between Vrindavan and the Vrindavan in the spiritual world? Oh, you read it?
One difference is you can go to Vrindavan, you can save up and drive by a ticket, you can go there for the pilgrimage for 3 weeks and come back again. It's actually up to the spiritual world.
Mm.
But if you can give a call to go there and you go on a one-way ticket.
Yeah. We sometimes say, however, that even in this world you can't buy a ticket to go to Vrindavan, you have to have Radharani's permission. And yet it appears that you can do it. You know, you can save up your money and go. But I think the interpretation would be that if you weren't qualified, if you were going with a bad attitude, you wouldn't get even a neophyte's. Well, you get any going there is merciful. We read in this Maturi Mahatma, even if you go there with business intents and you have a meal there, you benefit. Or if you touch the feet of someone who was there, the mercy is so great. But to have a better experience, you'd have to go with the right attitude and behave rightly while you're there. But your point is true. To enter the spiritual world and never come back, you have to be fully qualified. So that's one difference. Another difference. There's a purport. You couldn't find it, huh? Or you couldn't find the Brahma Samhita. Yeah. It's very. I'm not going to try to find it now. I'm just mentioning it, and it's like with this very scholarly language and intricate. He talks about how there's no difference, and how there may appear to be a difference, but there's no difference except that one is there and one is here. But he really goes over it.
We're all accustomed with Bhaktivinoda Thakura's delineation of what all the different demons
symbolize. Yeah.
And he calls the leelas of this world the occasional leelas, and he says the sadhaka could do well to meditate on the occasional leelas, the reasons why the Lord dispatches these different demons, what the different demons mean, their different anarthas, and this will help them to gain qualification for the eternal leelas.
Mm. And another point is when that day comes and we wander the realm of eternal Vrindavan, we'll do so in our Siddha Swarup. We'll be directly assisting Krishna and Radha. And now we wander not in awareness of what is our real place in the eternal Leela of Krishna. We practice Vaidhi Bhakti, or even Raganuga Vaidhi Bhakti, but we don't know the. When you know your Siddha Swarup and you're fully qualified, it's been revealed to you, that's what it'll be like in the spiritual world. You have to desire that. Okay, now our last part is Prabhupada Meditations book. I asked Radhanath to pick out some, you said the first one is a long one?
I was actually
Okay. So give me a chance to comment on them too, and maybe put some questions.
This is Prabhupada meditation. Before I start reading them, I just was appreciating that profound image of Srila Prabhupada on the front. I believe this was the photograph. It was one of the first photographs taken when Srila Prabhupada was going somewhere.
With the Bowery.
Yeah. Yeah, taken by a professional photographer.
Yeah. That's a very, very profound photograph.
Yeah.
I was sitting here looking at it while I was waiting for the opportunity to read it and listening to what you were saying. It's just very profound. Very deep. Of course, this that I wanted to read, just a couple of paragraphs, and the section is called Prabhupada, May We Write You Letters. And you're writing about basically you're making a mention of what you might like to write to Srila Prabhupada if you have the opportunity, and that you'd like to go ahead and do that. And I just thought this was nice in terms of our own reaching out to Srila Prabhupada.
May we write him letters after his disappearance.
And then this a little what happened. In your contemplating question, since your disappearance, our letters may appear to be more like monologues. We won't be able to say, Srila Prabhupada, I received your letter yesterday, and thank you very much for correcting me on my misconception about deity worship and prayer. It will never be exactly the same as when you were here, but something is there. Prabhupada, since I last wrote you a letter about deity worship, I see that you have corrected my notions. I noticed this while reading your purport in the Bhagavad Gita. We are still able to exchange with Prabhupada, and this can be expressed in our letters to him. My thought there was just in terms of how I found that very common experience that where I've been either praying to Krishna or concerned about some question or thought, and then there's and one of Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears and it's very evident that there's an exchange going on, a personal exchange going on.
Something you're looking for, and then it appears in the purport. You have to be very sensitive and faithful to receive that. There's also an exchange Prabhupada had on the morning walk, and the devotee asked him, Prabhupada, after you're gone, how can we receive instruction from you? And he said, it's in my books. And then the devotee said, aside from that, can it be like the Paramatma in the heart? And he said, that depends on your purity. That was the end of the exchange. But that depends on your purity indicates that it is possible. So that by the books and by the through the heart. Since he's not an ordinary person, he can continue to guide us if we're pure. That's it. Also the basis of our getting further instructions, higher instructions about our spiritual nature. And not thinking we have to go to someone else to get it. When he feels that we're ready and pure, then he can tell us. Okay, read another. And we'll make that the last, and that because I forgot when. Then we'll wind up the. We'll get the film ready.
Yes, this is actually in both of these. These two, one comes right after the other.
And in this last one, I'll just read that and then I'll go on and read the next. You mentioned a couple of things, try doing. And this one says, try this. Try writing your own letter to Srila Prabhupada, even if you are not his direct disciple. Is there anything you would like to say to Srila Prabhupada if you could write your own? So in this next one, you do that as well, and I really like, especially like to try this section. This section is called, What Kind of Devotee Are You? And you would have an experience where you got a letter from a spiritual distributor and criticized you for your lack of participation in book distribution. And then you were talking about appreciating one another's service and not just tolerating, but trying to seek more than that. So this is two little paragraphs. I'm going to try this. There are some staunch devotees who think my writing service is a tenuous connection to Prabhupada at best. Similarly, other devotees barely tolerate the service of others. Although in the end, we all do tolerate, I wish it could be more than that. For Prabhupada's pleasure, I wish we could love one another. It can hurt when someone doesn't appreciate us for our service to Prabhupada. Although we don't want to be proud, Krishna disappeared from the midst of the gopis because they thought of themselves as supremely fortunate. We do not want to continue to turn to Prabhupada. We must be prepared to readjust ourselves sometimes, but we have no other life than to go on serving him. Can I just read the try this section? Try this. Can you think of a devotee whose service you may not have appreciated in the past? Can you see how he or she has done something, no matter how small, that is pleasing to Guru and Krishna? Can you try and think more kindly about this devotee and their service in the future, and perhaps even say a kind word to them about it sometime when you see them?
Right.